And welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And with me is Phil Conlon.
Hi, yes, good afternoon, Phil.
World Series is done. We can get back to work. Yeah. That's it. Thanks to the manager. Thanks to the courageous pitcher and turning it all into a terrible joke on the Mets. We're going to be talking today to Thomas Mountain, the man on the, from the mountain in Eritrea. And we'll be speaking about his article of... which you can find on the web and at Counterpunch. Benghazi smokescreen, hiding Western war crimes in Libya. And at the halfway point, we're going to be talking with Isaac Saini, who is Professor Dalhousie, and there's an important conference coming up on November the 13th and 14th at the Steelworkers Hall. Better mentioned, we're getting ready for fundraising, so if you want to, Membership drive. It is our membership. This is your big chance.
It starts next Monday.
Next Monday we're starting, and so Taylor Report is
looking. Go to the website now, CIUT.FM. You can actually, you don't have to wait till next Monday. You can make your donation now. You can buy a membership now if you haven't already done so this year. And we have a goal to make, and please help us make it.
This is community radio, people. It belongs to you, and so... you can start, as Phil says, just go to CIUT.FM, get all the information you need to know there. What you need to know here is that we want you to mention the Taylor Report and, list that, put a little check mark behind the Taylor Report. And, of course, Phil Conlon is here. And Wednesdays, 6 to 8 o'clock, Classical Underground. So there
yes,
again.
Thanks for the plug. It. Yes, yeah. Please mention us as well.
Yeah. Well, it's a community. Yeah. You know, you see. We all get our 2 cents worth in. We're waiting to speak with Thomas Mountain. I'll just tell you, the Toronto Star goes to so much trouble to misinform everybody that want to call attention that today they outdid themselves. They interviewed. The way to understand the new Syria situation is to interview a guy who's wanted for tax evasion in Russia. And he's the headline on the piece is Russia driven by economic fears. And he said, and they say military activity in Syria is aimed at easing sanctions, claims critic Bill Browder. Here's my Phil Conlon is remembering Earl Browder, but anyhow, here's the problem with this. He's explaining us why Russia is in Syria, and he says, "Well, it's really money." Well, then maybe he could help us out with why is the U.S. in Syria? Why are they bombing? Would that have anything to do with money? Apparently not. And then alongside the article, they have a second headline that, again, is laughable. It's called The Islamic State Group Advances in Syria. And the Toronto Star is almost happy about that. And just this last comment on that, it's very interesting. They're writing about what they call advances by ISIS in Syria, and they've dropped the expression terrorist. There are no terrorists anymore. These now ISIS is the militant opposition, and the Toronto Star doesn't explain why they've decided to change the our terminology. Anyway, reference Orwell, and you can look it up. Thomas Mountain is with us now. Are you there, Thomas?
Yes, I am, Phil.
I'm sorry we kept you up, but they've invented something called daylight saving time, which has really made it more difficult. You are, of course, in Eritrea, and we're really glad to be talking to you because you've gone into what has been a headline story in North America now for 2 weeks, so that's the great war between the Republicans and Hillary Clinton and her emails and what happened in Benghazi. And you, in my view, correctly identified the problem. It's actually this whole thing's a smokescreen. Why is it a smokescreen? Talk about that.
Well, you know, the whole war in Libya was actually the lies used to justify the war in Libya. Mm-hmm. Were worse than the lies used to justify the invasion of Iraq. I mean, we have to remember, before Osama bin Laden, before ISIS, there was Al-Qaeda, before Al-Qaeda, there was Saddam Hussein, and before Saddam Hussein, there was Muammar Gaddafi, mm-hmm. in terms of the devil, convenient devil of the moment. And, they invaded Iraq, the United States and its allies invaded Iraq on completely fraudulent conditions, but it was worse in Libya because, in the case of Libya, everything told about all the reasons used to justify the war were complete fabrications. First of all, we had Hillary Clinton back in 2011 pronouncing that Gaddafi was giving Viagra to black mercenaries to rape Arab women.
Yes.
And that Gaddafi was bombing the population of Benghazi in the rebellion against him. Well, thanks to Donatello Rivero, who was the senior Amnesty International investigator, who arrived in Benghazi a week after the rebellion in Libya broke out in 2011, there was not a single aerial bombardment of anyone by the Gaddafi Air Force in the entire rebellion. There was no aerial bombardment. So the whole
he was not killing his own people, as President Obama kept claiming.
That's right. 10,000. Gaddafi slaughtered 10,000 of his own people. Well, it turns out, up until the time that the U.S. and its allies instigated the no-fly zone, in other words, started bombing Libya, there had only been 110 people killed in Benghazi and its environment. 110 only, and that included Gaddafi supporters, whereas Hillary Clinton and the lot were claiming that Gaddafi had already killed 10,000 people. There's going to be a mass genocide if the West didn't intervene. So there was no African mercenaries. They've never been able to produce one African mercenary. Mm-hmm. They haven't been able to produce one woman that was raped. Not one woman that was raped. They were saying thousands of people were raped. Hillary Clinton said Gaddafi was giving Viagra to his black African mercenary to rape Arab women.
Yeah, and this is Thomas Mountain. Thomas, didn't... If I recall, and this is really kind of important for understanding how colonialism, neocolonialism works, the International Criminal Tribunal, International Criminal Court, the prosecutor helped with tell that lie. Am I right?
Yes, the infamous Spanish prosecutor who was supposed to have been such a human defender of human rights got up there and said the same thing. So it was just a unanimous condemnation of Gaddafi with all fabrications.
Mm-hmm.
No aerial bombardments, no black African mercenaries, and no rapes. All the reasons told to justify the war in Libya were complete fabrication. And they destroyed Libya, and who was the winner? The big winner in the war in Libya was, once again, religious fanatics. In this case, one Del Hajj, who is now the caliph of a large chunk of North Africa that was formerly part of Libya. Mm-hmm. Now, Bel Hodge is a very interesting character because he had been the head of one of the heads of the Al-Qaeda in Iraq back after the U.S. invasion. He'd come from Libya to fight in Iraq and spend his time not fighting the Americans who invaded Iraq, but organizing suicide bombers to go attack Shia marketplaces and Shia mosques and religious gatherings.
Mm-hmm.
And thousands and thousands, untold thousands of Shia were slaughtered by suicide bombers organized by one Bel Hajj, a Libyan fanatic.
Mm-hmm.
He had been run out of Libya and run out of Iraq and arrested in Malaysia and returned back to Libya where Gaddafi had put him in prison.
Yeah, right. By the way, as in Gaddafi, one of these things people need to appreciate, Gaddafi was part of what he thought was an international effort to combat terrorists, and they would agreed that this is a bad guy, he should be put away. But immediately the West turned on Gaddafi and said, no, you have to release him, didn't they?
Well, actually, Gaddafi's son, Islam al-Saif al-Islam, oldest son, had arranged a pardon or a parole for Bel Hajj in exchange for Bel Hajj giving his word, his sacred word, that he wouldn't take up arms against the government of Libya. And Bel Hajj was released on parole, and as soon as the rebellion broke out, which was shortly after this release, Bel Hajj took up arms against Gaddafi. So, then they portrayed Bel Hajj, the Western media portrayed Bel Hajj as a moderate, as somebody that had been reformed.
That's a familiar.
He was an anti-Qaddafi patriot. And this guy was somebody we should support. I remember watching him on an Al Jazeera interview saying how, yes, he never was that nasty guy they claimed he was, and that he'd seen the light and he was going to change his ways. And now that the government is, you know, the Gaddafi government has bombed into the dust and Gaddafi himself murdered, El-Haj has now turned around and set up basically an Islamic state in Libya. Well, about a third of Libya and a growing portion of Libya, expanding portion of Libya, is now run by Belhaj and the Islamic State. And this is the main big winner from the war in Libya, was, once again, is religious extremism.
Yeah. And, well, as you point out, it's also a source of arms. You mentioned a couple of times in your article, by the way, this is Thomas Mountain, and the article is Benghazi Smokescreen, Hiding Western War Crimes in Libya. They've gone on to be the kind of an armory and, I guess, trainer for terrorist operations in Africa.
Yes, it's the safe haven. The big chunk of Libya is safe haven now for terrorism. And, you know, the whole expansion of the extremist movement in Nigeria has been fueled by arms shipped from Libya. And who is shipping those arms? Most certainly Belhaj, because Belhaj is allies of the Boko Haram extremist movement in Nigeria. Not just in Nigeria, it's expanded into Chad and Cameroon as well.
Yes, so, and some of the arms...
Belhaj,
go on, sorry.
No, go ahead.
The Syria, they've also provided personnel and weapons in Syria over the past 3 or 4 years.
Well, that's what the so-called four dead American diplomats and their consulate or whatever it was, headquarters in Benghazi, were up to. They had been arranging the transfer of massive amounts of Libyan arms to the terrorists in Syria. Mm-hmm. And then the terrorists themselves in Libya rose up against them and attacked their compound and ended up killing four Americans. Mm-hmm. So this huge smokescreen has been created to talk about what was the problem? Failures of intelligence, or Hillary Clinton should have known better, or anything but the fact that the very act of killing the Americans was a direct result of the Americans' war in Libya, which was completely unjustified, illegal, immoral, and a war crime.
Yeah, indeed, and it came under this rubric of no-fly zone, which Hillary is now, strangely and crazily enough, repeating in her political rhetoric today of a no-fly zone for Syria, she and Brzezinski and other half-mad people, McCain. But you mentioned that was pretty much the end of the road of any credibility for that, because can you remind us of what the no-fly zone was supposed to be and what it became?
Yeah, just like there was a no-fly zone in Iraq where they were using the excuse back before the invasion in 2003. For years before the invasion, under Bill Clinton, they were bombing. The United States was carrying out almost daily bombardments of Iraq on the excuse of a no-fly zone all across Iraq. Mm-hmm. So the whole history of this no-fly zone has been it's just an excuse for them to come in and wage war, aerial warfare.
Mm-hmm. This is Thomas Mountain. This issue of blame, of the story you pointed out that they began with, which they had to save the Libyan women from the Africans, etc. The other side to that is what has happened to any African living in Libya. Could you talk about that? Because there's a consequence of telling lies that big.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that Barack Obama was, he was supporting the lynching of black Africans in Libya. Historically, for many, many years, since when you and I were back in Libya in 1987 together, part of the peace delegation, commemorate the first anniversary of the bombing of Libya in 1986, mm-hmm. Africans have been doing the dirty work. Black Africans have been doing the dirty work in Libya. It's sort of a backward nature. There's much of the Arab society that certain jobs like mechanics and other jobs like that are too dirty for a decent Arab man to do. Mm-hmm. They've imported Africans for many, many years, as well as Filipinos and others, to do the dirty jobs in Libya, because Libya was a very rich country. Mm-hmm. And the Libyans didn't have to do this dirty work. They could pay Africans and others to do it for them. So there were a lot of thousands and tens of thousands of black Africans in Libya working in the Libyan economy, playing a critical role in the Libyan economy. And when the racist Arab militias were given support of the Americans and the Western military, what did they do? They turned around and started lynching black Africans in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
So it's this really sick spectacle of Barack Obama supporting the lynching of black Africans in Libya, which included many, many Eritreans from where I live who had been working in Libya, whose burned and mutilated bodies were, where they were strangled and hung off of bridges and dumped in the desert and burned. Very similar. Was it Libya or was it Louisiana? I mean, this is they were lynching Africans in Libya.
It's the same.
Barack Obama, the black American president, was supporting this.
Yeah, the same trope. From the beginning of the Republic, they would recognize some of the methods. We're speaking to Thomas Mountain, by the way. Thomas Mountain's an independent journalist living and reporting from Eritrea since 2006, and he can be reached via Twitter at thomasmountain.com. Just Thomas Mountain.
Well, Thomas C. Mountain.
Yeah, Thomas.
Thomas C. Mountain.
Thomas C. I better get Thomas the C in there, and they'll never reach you. You're right. And he's on Facebook, Thomas Mountain, or via email.
Thomas C. Mountain.
Yeah.
Thomas C. Mountain. If you didn't get the C in there, you won't get me.
Yeah, you've introduced it. Right. Since I've known you, we've added a C to your name, Thomas C. Mountain. And it's, of course, it's also Thomas Mountain at gmail.com. Now, going back to this beginning of this, it's also striking, is it not, that the whole idea that why it's all so important to the American Congress to pillory Hillary is because one or two white Americans got harmed in the aftermath of all that went on. Isn't it? I mean, otherwise the Congress wouldn't care, right?
Right, and the irony of all that is that the four Americans that were basically suffocated to death in the basement of their compound in Benghazi were all involved in very illegal and extremely dangerous activity of shipping weapons in Libya to ISIS in Syria. So these guys weren't just some innocent American diplomats that had caught in a crossfire. They were actually out there organizing the shipment of weapons to terrorists.
Yes.
And so they should have been pilloried for that. Instead, they turned into heroes, and they're saying, oh, Hillary is responsible for these heroes' deaths. Mm-hmm. Well, they're actually a bunch of criminals engaged in an activity which has resulted in thousands of people being killed in Syria.
Yeah. My memory is that they were using the term embassy when in fact it was not an embassy, it was a safe house, so-called, that became unsafe.
That's right. That's the thing, and the whole situation was, basically a dodgy lot of terrorist supporters and people that were directly implicated in the support of terrorism by providing them with arms. People that, were supposed to be the enemies of the United States were getting weapons from the U.S. government, and the people who were providing them were actually the diplomat, the senior diplomat, the ambassador to Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys got suffocated to death in the basement of their safe house and turned into heroes. When in reality, these guys were doing something that everybody should be sickened by.
Yes. Well, and things to be sick about, you also point out in the article, not discussed enough, is the... We've also developed this now demonology in reference to Mr. Gaddafi, but in fact, as you say in the article, Libya was not only a wealthy country, but it was rather exemplary, and that was the greatest tragedy is the loss of it. Could you just sketch out some of the things about Libya that had been accomplished and that people should remember?
Libya was the relative island of religious tolerance in an island, surrounded by neighbors with large extremist movements. fighting larger wars against larger extremist movements. I mean, Algeria, you know, in the 1990s, 200,000 people died in Algeria, where the basically a forerunner of the Islamic State, you know, the forefathers of the Islamic State were fighting the Algerian government. You know, there's thousands and thousands of Tunisians who fled to Tunisia to go fight on behalf of the Islamic State in Iraq and in Syria. Yeah. You know, Egypt has been fighting off and on a war against religious fanatics for many, many years. You know, Libya was the one place that basically people got along, where there was a Shia population in Libya. Mm-hmm. There was even a Sufi population in Libya. Mm-hmm. You know, Libya was a place where they didn't tolerate religious fanaticism, and in general, the people were quite tolerant because the Gaddafi government put religious fanatics where they belonged, in prison, mm-hmm. which they've since been condemned all as a dictatorship. Why? Because they put Belhaj and these Al-Qaeda guys in prison. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, we do the same thing here in Eritrea. We don't allow religious fanatics in Eritrea. I mean, whether they're born-again Christians coming in here and saying worship of Islam is the worship of the devil, or whether it's Osama bin Laden coming in saying we need to have an Islamic State here. Mm-hmm. You're going to come into Eritrea and preach religious violence and hatred, they put you in prison. We're not going to tolerate that here. Half mm-hmm. our country is Muslim, half is Christian. We're not going to tolerate religious, you know, hate mm-hmm. speech. Mm-hmm. Well, Gaddafi didn't tolerate that either. And mm-hmm. He was widely condemned for that. But Libya was basically, in terms of what was going on in the neighborhood in North Africa, Libya was probably one of the places where religions were most tolerated. Mm-hmm. And there was less religious friction than any of its neighbors.
Yeah, and he had he was an Arab leader who identified himself as also an African.
Well, yeah, that was something he came to later on in life. But yes, he would talk about when we were in Libya. Remember, we were given the Green Book and told about the Arab Jamahiriya, where they were going to unite all the Arabs into one nation. Mm-hmm. And after a while, Gaddafi saw that wasn't working and that wasn't going to work. And, you know, extended an olive branch and a hand of friendship to his African brothers and sisters. And was actually in the midst of doing something very, very positive for Africa, which was setting up the African Investment Bank, where he put $40 billion into a U.S. bank account. And it's interesting how the Benghazi hearings never once mentioned the fact that Hillary had rolled out the red carpet for Gaddafi's son, Saif al-Islam, just not that long before the war broke out in Libya, and the United States started bombing Libya and demonizing Gaddafi family. And because he put his $40 billion in American account, and he was become friends with the United States. Yeah. So, you know, not a mention of all this Hillary schmoozing it with Saif al-Islam.
So then they
said, oh,
then they took his life, and then they took his money.
Well, they took the $40 billion, and today it's still posted in American accounts, as far as I can tell. They won't release it to this so-called government in Libya. Yeah. But, you know, what's Gaddafi going to do with that $40 billion? He was going to provide interest-free or low-interest long-term loans to African countries to build infrastructure. He was going to build a railroad from North Africa all the way to South Africa, and from East Africa all the way to West Africa. Mm-hmm. He was going to put billions of dollars into upgrading the energy infrastructure in South Africa so that the people could actually have electricity on a reliable basis. He was going to do a lot of things that basically was going to kick the Western financial terrorists like the World Bank and the IMF out of Africa and allow Africa to develop itself without having to be preyed upon by predatory loans by these Western terrorist organizations like the World Bank and the IMF.
Yep.
So Gaddafi was actually about to launch a major investment program in Africa, which was going to help Africa pull itself out of this really being on its knees as a economy to Western countries. And it's one of the reasons why I'm convinced, and many people are convinced, the West went in and destroyed Libya, was to prevent the West from losing control of Africa via the African Investment Bank, which Gaddafi was about to fund.
Yeah, that's a really important story. And I'm glad you, by the way, of course, you reference it in your article. We've been speaking with Thomas Mountain, And in the title of the article, you find it Counterpunch and Elsewhere on the Net, Benghazi smokescreen hiding Western war crimes in Libya. Thomas, it's a great pleasure talking to you. I'm sorry we had to keep you up late in Eritrea.
No problem, Phil. Good to be back. It's almost 6 years since I've been on your show.
Yeah, you're a veteran.
Say, all the readers out there. Yeah, you know, these leaders, all your listeners out there, you guys, you know, it comes time to raise funds for the Taylor Report. Dig deep, because there's very few opportunities to hear the truth about what's going on. And Phil Taylor and his report has been going on for years now. It's one of the few places to do so. So I urge all your listeners out there, you know, when it comes time to give, support the Taylor Report, okay?
I let you. You notice I didn't interrupt at all. Thank you very much, Thomas. We'll talk.
Okay, Phil.
Bye bye. By golly, Thomas Mountain, remind us. We will be doing this. So go to CIUT.fm and get and support the Taylor Report. Next Monday we will be at it hot and heavy. We'll be working on this steadily. And Thomas is, yes, one of our regular guests here. You know, he's there, Eritrea, right cheek by jowl with the Yemen, where there is bombings going on daily. The Toronto Star doesn't choose to talk about it, and the Globe and others. But the government of Saudi Arabia, the richest government in the Middle East, is bombing Yemen, the poorest. And everybody seems to think that's just fine, because all the monarchs think it's a good idea. And the people of Yemen, who are not monarchists, are objecting. My guess is the poor will beat the rich. That's just how it works. It's the Taylor Report, CIUT.FM. You can write to us, Taylor at CIUT.FM. FM, and of course we're on. Let me get my Facebook / the Taylor Report, and again I will just tell you that on the 9th, and that'll be next Monday, we're going to be asking you to support community radio and become members of CIUT. Listen, think about how many places can say community radio. It is a very healthy phenomenon. We don't rely on Pepsi-Cola or even Coca-Cola or the World Bank or anybody else. It's because the community wants to have radio, and that way they don't have to be filtered like I do. If I want to watch football, I actually have to watch commercials interrupted by football. And, you know, it gets to be pathetic, doesn't it, Phil? You watch.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible. Isn't it? You know, there are certain commercials they play over and over again, and you start going mad. You say, but I want to see the game, so you put up with it. Yeah. But it's really, it's oppressive.
Don't you sometimes have trouble remembering what was happening? You know, you come back.
Yeah. Oh, is that commercial again? Or the commercial gets into your head, and yes, it's like it pushes the game out, right? Which,
yes,
is even worse, right?
Yes. It introduces. And I have to say, periodically, the commercial, it turns out to have blocked one of the plays that I wanted to see. You come back,
yes,
and it's already going on, and
yes,
you say, oh, thanks a
lot.
And
that happened in the World Series the last couple of days. It happened a couple of times.
Yeah, where you come back, and the guy is pitching, yeah, or, you know, yeah, it's... well, that's what capitalism will do. But this is community radio. This belongs to you, and so make sure that you support the Taylor Report and Classical Underground and such.
And don't forget CIT Friday morning, where we have scintillating discussion every Friday morning at 9 o'clock.
Last Friday, we were talking to Lynn Slotkin, had as a guest one of the greatest actresses in the world, Fiona Reid. And I don't know if it's letting it be out a secret, but she told us she's a Giants fan. So there you go. So just snippets, you see. But yeah, that is great. It's great radio. That was a great interview with Fiona Reid and with John Shute, I believe it was, the director. And so that's what, again. And the other thing that, you know, community radio gives is time to think, as opposed to, you know, carving it up so that you hear a voice of a famous person for about maybe a minute and 30 seconds. I mean, there are times when you think about it. People say, oh, he gave an interview. And you look at that interview. A long interview is 3 minutes. That's how. And you say, well, how can anybody digest that? We're going to take a break, and we will come back. We have an interview with Isaac Saini about this event coming up on November 13, 14 at the Steelworkers Hall, 25 Cecil Street. It begins at 7 o'clock on November the 13th, and we'll be on the on 9:30 a.m. on the 14th. Incidentally, there's going to be a film about what the political turmoil in Burkina Faso, where they finally got rid of a junta boss. And but the, while the drama isn't over, that's going to be part of the program. We're going to listen now to Isaac Saini will be coming up on the other side.